I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, once again, political cowardice on full display last night at the University of Washington. Also on that same note, threats of violence tonight ahead of a planned event at the University of Washington. And the woke mind virus has claimed a beloved seafare tradition. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Hours. It took hours last night for police to be sent in to arrest left-wing violent extremists who once again took over a space on the campus of the University of Washington. And I'm watching this unfold last night and like, look, we're used to the left-wing crazies here. We're used to protests and violence and riots over whatever the topic of the day is that's angering the little basement dwellers who come out and dress like ninjas. I mean, this has been happening in Washington State for years. But I guess there's a small part of me that would have hoped the University of Washington has learned its lesson after everything that's happened on campus there that has been blatantly anti-Semitic, starting with the takeover of the Quad and everything that's happened since then, especially during a period of time when the Trump administration is making threats to withhold funding, is saying it's going to and is acting to take away student visas for individuals who participate in that sort of conduct. So there was, just to set this up for you, and we'll get to some of the video that happened last night if you're not familiar with it. So some Hamas supporters, which are basically some students, some not students, but they were part of a group at the UW called Super UW. It was like a campus group that has since been disbanded. The university has banned it because of their anti-Semitic conduct and other things that they've done on campus. But they made plans to take over the UW engineering building and demand, and they published a manifesto online and to demand that the university sever ties with Boeing. They said in their manifesto, the University of Washington is a direct partner in the genocide of the Palestinian people through its allegiance to its partnership with Boeing, whatever. So this starts pretty early in the evening. And at the time, and this was all over social media. I mean, there were social media influencers on the conservative side of things who got there really quickly because, again, they posted a manifesto online. They said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take over the engineering building. They did. They were setting up, you know, makeshift barricades outside to keep people out. And I'm watching, and like, I would say an hour or two into this ordeal, you start to see the first inclination that police are allowed to give a damn about what's happening there. And what I saw unfold was an utter embarrassment. Here it is. Yeah, those are police kowtowing to ninja cosplayers holding pieces of garbage cans as shields, telling police to move back, and police are acquiescing. And then, of course, the Antifa, pro-Hamas, anti-Semites cheer in victory. And when I say cowardice, by the way, as I'm watching this, my blood boiling last night. When I say cowardice, I'm not talking about those cops. On the back of their shirts, in case you didn't notice, it says POETS. This is the little team that the Seattle Police Department put together to kowtow to left-wing rioters where they go in and try to talk to them. Oh, we're going to talk these people down, which has never worked, by the way. Never worked. Because they're not reasonable human beings, as we'll discuss in a moment, some of the things that were being said. They're not reasonable human beings. These are the same individuals who took over a police precinct in 2020, who were burning cop cars in the streets, who assaulted police officers and journalists over BLM or the Occupy movement, whatever it is, whatever the issue of the day is that these left-wing basement dwellers care about. They do not care about reason. Yet this is, of course, political cowardice that seeps down and controls law enforcement. So they're completely neutered and they can't do anything except back away and cower to, again, a mob of people dressed like ninjas who have cut garbage cans in half and are using them as shields. Move back, and police are more than happy to oblige because they have to. Because that's what's been dictated to them from the top. So I'm watching that, and that's embarrassing enough, right? But then things turn from embarrassing into, you know, serious and a familiar place. I mean, you know where these things are going to go. So they've got the building barricaded and also surrounding streets barricaded so people can't move about freely. And then someone tipped over a whole dumpster and lit it on fire. So then you've got this massive flame that's starting to grow and grow and grow. Starts as a literal dumpster fire, which I think is a pretty good metaphor for what's happening at the University of Washington. But at one point, that fire was so out of control, it was going to light the building adjacent to it on fire. And there were people panicking online like, oh my God, this building's going to catch flame. Still no cops there. Still no firefighters there. I mean, this took hours to have any sort of meaningful police response to all of this. And for any individuals who want to say, well, these are, you know, peaceful demonstrators, I think lighting things on fire sort of contradicts that, as does, you know, an aggressive confrontation with police, as does taking items that you found around campus and stacking them up as a barricade to keep students from moving from place to place and stopping vehicles from moving around campus, including buses with students trying to get from A to B. So all of that negates this whole idea of, oh, First Amendment protest. And then, of course, in case people want to deny that this was anti-Semites, that this was violent left-wing extremists, they make that pretty clear.
But if you're here with the police,
you'll be subject to arrest and other police action.
Every said pop is a victory for the resistance.
My favorite thing I love seeing is when the resistance in Palestine shoots an Israeli tank and kills them. You know, the same goes for the cops, honestly. When
my
I saw the precinct
when they
burn,
throw gay people like, from buildings in Gaza, that's my favorite.
Show me evidence.
Shut the up.
Yeah. Every dead cop is a victory for the resistance. My favorite thing is when the resistance in Palestine shoots an Israeli in the face and kills him. Yeah, real peaceful. Real cool to be on the side of the people defending them, right? So hours go by. And when the first tweet came out about this, I saw it from Jonathan Cho. There were a few really good independent journalists on the ground covering this. And the first tweet was sort of, oh, these left-wingers are occupying this building. I said, okay, go take them out. Like, go remove them from the building, right? They're just young people armed with garbage pails. So just send some cops in and pull them out in handcuffs. What's so hard about that? And then, of course, because police who are at the mercy of politicians haven't been given the okay to do that, that's when you see things devolve. So because you don't have the political will to go in early on and just remove them and arrest them, so then you got the fires, then you've got, you know, the violence that breaks out, then things get so bad to the point where now you got to have like whole SWAT teams come in, multi-agency response, state patrol come in, all for some ninja cosplayers who emerge from their parents' basements once a week to wreak havoc on the city. So ultimately, police did come in and make arrests. Here's video of that. And they actually had to go kind of door to door, clearing all the rooms in this building. And then ultimately, they dragged out, which I love to see that at least, 30 or so protesters, put them in the old paddy wagon. Oh, and the crowd shouting, we love you, like they're rock stars. Oh my God, it's all just ridiculous. But none of that had to happen. I mean, you could have gone in right away, pulled them out of the building, God forbid, stop them from entering the building and taking it over in the first place. But of course, UW has to continue to pussyfoot around left-wing extremism. And then UW issued a strong statement later on in the evening. They said around 30 individuals who occupied the building were arrested and charges of trespassing, property destruction, disorderly conduct, and conspiracy to commit all three will be referred to the King County Prosecutor's Office. Any student identified as being involved will also be referred to the Student Conduct Office, which, bullshit. Because remember last time they said that after they let all the people who'd taken over the campus go, but we'll work to identify if there were any students who were involved in, you know, the violence or vandalism, and we'll hold them accountable. Did that ever happen? No, the moment to hold them accountable was while you had them there. So I don't trust that the UW will do absolutely anything to hold students who were part of the protest accountable. But they went on to say, the UW is committed to maintaining a secure learning and research environment. No, you're not. And strongly condemns this illegal building occupation and the anti-Semitic statement that was issued by a suspended student group on Monday. The university will not be intimidated, yes, you will, by this sort of offensive and destructive behavior and will continue to oppose anti-Semitism in all its forms. Unlikely. And look, if they want to take that position now, that's fine. But all the history of what UW has done and not done in the face of these left-wing extremists makes it pretty clear that they don't have a track record of doing any of those things. And why? Why? Why is it so hard? And I say this every single time. I'm literally going out of my mind. If these were right-wing anti-Semites, let's say you had a far-right group that took over a building at the University of Washington. You know where I'm going with this because I've said it a million times. Bob Ferguson would have been there for a press conference immediately. State Patrol would have been called in. Surrounding agencies would have been called in. There would have been armed SWAT within minutes. And it would have been live coverage beginning to end on every newscast in the city. And it would be front page news from now for the next 3 years. Kind of similar to January 6th, right? And I would say that would be appropriate response to have an absolute mass police response to a situation where you have far-right extremists who are taking over a campus building at the University of Washington. You don't see anything close to that whenever it's left-wing extremists. And in fact, the media, they were putting out, you know, headlines. Como News, pro-Palestinian students at the University of Washington occupied the interdisciplinary engineering building Monday evening. Oh, well, isn't that nice? Cairo 7, masked activists take over new UW engineering building and stage blockade. Isn't that nice? You think for 1 second that both of those headlines wouldn't have said right-wing extremists if they were right-wing extremists? Of course they would have. But for some reason, we have to pussyfoot around and coddle these poor left-wing extremists, despite all the terror that they perpetrated in the city of Seattle over the years. And we still treat them with kid gloves. I can't wait to see what Washington State's Domestic Violent Extremism Task Force has to say about this, because they ignore every other act of left-wing extremism and focus specifically on Trump supporters and conservatives and the right, despite the fact that there is virtually no right-wing extremism happening in the state of Washington and hasn't been for a very long time. And so then, of course, I'm waiting, right? Well, surely Governor Ferguson has to come out and say something. Not only is he the governor of the state of Washington, but that's his alma mater, right? And I'm thinking, well, also, you know, Mayor Bruce Harrell, they have to come out and say something. And the hours are going by. The hours are ticking by. And I haven't seen any statement from the governor. I haven't seen any statement from the mayor. This morning, I go back, I check their social media accounts. I check their press release pages on their websites, and I don't see anything. And then thankfully, right before we came on the air today, because I was about to absolutely go scorched earth on both of them, thankfully, Governor Bob Ferguson came out with a really strong condemnation. Yeah, no, he didn't. He hasn't said anything. This show is live at noon. He hasn't said anything. Now, that's Bob Ferguson, but of course, Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell did come out and say something this morning. Oh, that's right. No, he didn't. Because they're cowards. For 1 second, no one could convince me. No one could make a strong, convincing argument that both of them wouldn't have been on scene last night directing the response personally had they been right-wing extremists. No one can make that argument convincingly. So that happens last night. Thankfully, 30 of them are arrested. I really hope, by the way, that the federal government, the names of all 30 arrested are public. They're out there. Hopefully they're charged. I'm not going to hold my breath. But I really hope that the federal government, the Department of Homeland Security, ICE, I hope they are scanning that list of names to see if any of them are here on a student visa. Because that would be a really easy way to revoke some of those student visas. And there's all the video in the world of the conduct that they engaged in that didn't resemble anything close to protected First Amendment free speech. So all that happens last night. And then, probably the worst timing ever, Riley Gaines is going to be on campus tonight. So Riley Gaines, of course, the former collegiate swimmer who has become an outspoken advocate for protecting girls' sports, has helped lead to legislation and executive orders at the national level. So she's going to be on campus tonight giving a speech. And here is what the left-wing extremists are posting online as we speak. Pictures of guns saying, protect the dolls, protect the boys, protect trans youth by any means necessary, which is just an outright threat of violence against Riley Gaines. No transphobia at UW, fight Trump's agenda, rally to kick Riley Gaines off campus, defend trans rights, tonight at 5:30 p.m. So now we have a situation where they are out and out threatening violence. By any means necessary, here's a picture of a gun. So I know, I don't know Riley Gaines personally per se, I've got a chance to meet her before, but I know that she's not going to back down. We all already know that in previous events where female athletes have spoke at the University of Washington about protecting girls' sports, they have been met with violence and hostility. One of them, Olivia, is going to be there with Riley Gaines tonight. You'll recall the incident that happened when she spoke, when they came in the building, broke out a window, surrounded the building. People had to be let out by security. So if that happened just for Olivia, imagine what's going to happen tonight with Riley Gaines. So Riley Gaines is on this tour. And Nicole, do we have video from Portland from last night? No, that's right. So Riley Gaines was in Portland last night. And there was a bunch of protesters who showed up to go unhinged about Riley Gaines being there. So we already kind of know what's going to happen at UW tonight just based on what happened last night in Oregon. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, we'll get to it coming up towards the end of the show because I want to give you some time to respond given everything that I just talked about. Should UW cancel it? Should UW cancel the Riley Gaines event just out of an abundance of caution and safety concerns for the UW community? And one of the things I'll say, I mean, I have a strong opinion about that. I don't want to give my answer before you guys give yours in our subscriber poll. But we've already proven that UW's not willing to protect individuals against left-wing extremists. They're not willing to do it. Going in and effecting arrests after 6 hours isn't protecting people. You could have made it, it could have been done so much easier early on had you been prepared for it, had you responded swiftly, and had those cops not backed down, been made to, oh, cower and back down to the left-wing extremists. Not even, I didn't even see guns in their hands. I'm sure they had guns on their waistbands. Like, you're met with an angry mob that is known for being violent against police, that's out there shouting about every death of a police officer is a win for the resistance. And you're going up there, you know, no body armor and gear. Oh, will you please stop? Will you please stop? Oh my God. I mean, those officers have to be beside themselves. Being made to do this and cower in this way by politicians and by the University of Washington. It's truly shameful. It's truly shameful. So I don't know for sure what the answer is. I mean, I'm very concerned about this evening. I think that's fair to say. I will be on campus this evening as well, covering the events, especially after what happened last night. One thing I would point out, though, that we know is these left-wing extremists are a pretty small faction. It's the same people. I mean, I've been seeing the same people at these protests for years and years and years. So, Nicole, are you able to, maybe we can do it here during a different segment. I want to check and see if these individuals are still in jail as we speak. Let's just say that they are. We can do that later. If they are, they should somehow find a way to hold them there through tonight. I don't know how you do that. I mean, I know people have constitutional rights. You can hold them, I think, for like 48 or 72 hours pending charges, but you have to have a bail hearing, which presumably they would have today. But if you can find a way to hold them there through tonight, you take those 30 crazies out of the mix, I don't think that things will get too bad tonight. Because really, it's just a small group that's actually willing to commit crimes and vandalize and hurt people or whatever it is. So we'll be monitoring all of it. Really concerned for Riley Gaines, though, but she's tough. And I know that she has been met with hostility on campuses across the country. And certainly the University of Washington is going to be no exception.
It looks like they're in the middle of first appearances kind right of now. This morning. So yeah. So some of them,
I doubt their bail is going to be set very high.
Right.
And I'm sure that whatever that left-wing bail group is will come in and bail them right out. And they'll be back at the University of Washington tonight. I hope, though, again, that the federal government is waiting outside the courthouse to scoop up any of them who are here on a student visa and to tell them, hey, your visa's been revoked. I would sure like to see that. All right, coming up next, I want to go back to Olympia quick. Even though the legislative session is over, there are still some bills that are hanging in the balance, but we now know how Bob Ferguson feels about at least one of them. That's coming up first. Take the First Mark Challenge. This is an opportunity to see if you or your family can save some money on the insurance that you need. Can't get rid of it, so you want to make sure you have the right insurance that's going to cover you in the event that the unthinkable happens, not something that you want to cheap out on, but you also want to make sure that you're not paying any more than you need to pay. So First Mark Insurance can help you with that. They are going to start by doing a full review of your current insurance, talking to you about your insurance needs, making sure they know about any changes coming up in your life, etc. And then they're going to go out, they're going to shop their market of carriers, and they're going to come back to you with their recommendations. It could be, hey, stay with your current insurance, or it could be, we can save you a lot more money by going to these other carriers. And the real good news is you never pay First Mark anything for their services. We got another, just our latest response from Daryl, a retired law enforcement officer in Washington State. Said, my wife and I are traveling the U.S. in our fifth wheel full time. We still own a house. My mom's in Washington. I listen to you every day and finally took the First Mark Challenge. Our current insurance expires in a couple months. In the last 2 years, it's gone up every year a lot. I called First Mark and got a call back from Joe, who took time to not only explain my options, but went back and found a better and more tailored quote for what we needed on the trailer. In the end, they saved us over $400 from our current insurance, which I am sure would have gone up even more at the renewal date. I told them where I heard about them, and now my daughter is calling them for her home and auto. Thank you guys for the advice. You're welcome, Daryl. And you guys travel safe out there while you're out and about around the country. That sounds like a very, very fun thing. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, so we're sitting here hand-wringing all session. I even promised, if you'll recall, I promised to go to church. I promised I'd go to one church service if Bob Ferguson vetoed rent control. So here I am all session long thinking this guy promised on the campaign trail that he was going to build hundreds of thousands of additional units during his first term of affordable housing and of workforce housing. So certainly he can't support rent control because that would totally cut him off at the knees and he wouldn't be able to accomplish this massive campaign promise that he made. Only to find out that all along, the whole session debate over it, Governor Ferguson has behind the scenes supported rent control. He just didn't want to say it publicly. That's according to the Washington State Standard. The headline, behind the scenes, Ferguson backed the bill to cap rent increases for months. The governor finally voiced support publicly for the legislation on Wednesday after a lawmaker shared information about his views. So basically what happened, and this is really interesting, there's a lot of back and forth we can talk about here because there's some political undercurrents that are important to know. So there's a state lawmaker named Yasmin Trudeau. And she's a progressive, like far left wing, and she wants to run for governor. I know she does. So she is, and it's very blatant in this story. I'm not going to get into all of that, but she's chiding Bob Ferguson in this story with the Standard, basically saying it would be nice if he stood up for working class people and made his support of this known publicly. Instead, he just tells us he supports it behind the scenes and then doesn't come out vocally and support it as we're fighting these hard fought battles. So she's just setting herself up for a primary challenge, which she won't even get 10% in a primary challenge against Bob Ferguson, but I digress. So she told the State Standard, it said, State Representative Yasmin Trudeau, one of the chief architects of legislation to cap rent hikes across Washington, says Governor Bob Ferguson's team has made clear to lawmakers since the second week of the legislative session back in January that he supports the measure. Just absolutely unbelievable. So why didn't he say anything? The governor's communications director, Brianna Ajo, said in a statement that the governor's office has a process to, quote, thoroughly review bills after they pass. The governor has rarely offered public comment on bills prior to the completion of that process. Ajo said, the governor is supportive of the policy, but we need to complete our process before he offers further comment, she said of the rent bill. Okay. To me, that's him, again, playing both sides. That's him acting like a moderate, doesn't want to come out and say he supports rent control, whispers to the Democrats, I support rent control behind the scenes. And then he's going to pretend that he's doing a thorough review of it when he supported it all along since week two. And then he's going to sign it into law. Absolutely insane. So meanwhile, as that's happening, so rent control is going to be law statewide in Washington. It's going to be disastrous. Absolutely insane. And we know it's going to be disastrous, not because it's a guess. There's no, not because like, I think it'll be disastrous and someone else might have a very reasonable argument for why it's not going to be disastrous. No, there is no reasonable fact-based argument for rent control, that it won't ultimately hurt renters. Why? Because it has in every place it's ever been tried, including, as we speak, in New York City. So just like in San Francisco, New York City essentially has a board that deals with rent control and sets the caps for rent increases. And right now, according to the New York Post, the caps they've set for rent increases are outpacing or are lower than the costs. So the costs for landlords through inflation, like increased energy costs, all of these other costs added for landlords are higher than the allowed rent increases by the board in New York City. So the New York Post, this is the headline, "Stiffing landlords is killing New York City's housing market." The Rent Guidelines Board last week took yet another step toward crushing the city's housing market by capping rent hikes below landlord costs. So what they're looking to cap it at for this year is about 1.75% to 4.75% for a one-year lease and 4.75% to 7.75% for two-year renewals. So actually, that 7.75% number is pretty similar to what Washington State is about to put into place. So they give an example here by the numbers. Again, nobody's making this up. This is just by the numbers. It's just a fact. From 2013 to 2023, costs for pre-1974 buildings outside the Manhattan core, which is where most rent-stabilized units are located, skyrocketed to 37%. Yet the board only let rents go up less than 25%. So explain to me how anyone is supposed to be a landlord in New York City. Explain to me why anyone would want to be a landlord in New York City. If your costs go up 37% and over that period of time, you're only allowed to raise rents 25%. So are we just supposed to say landlords should be resigned to losing money, to owning these units as like a charitable cause? So of course, what happens, as the New York Post points out, landlords who can't keep up with costs wind up having to sell to more unsavory characters or skimping on maintenance, and tenants suffer either way, or owners will simply go bust, losing their buildings to banks or to the city for failing to pay taxes as they did during the 1970s and 1980s. So the end result is fewer affordable units, not controlled rent, not predictability for tenants. And a few people might benefit early on, but over the long haul, in the long run, it is going to wreak havoc on housing in Washington State even further, just like it has everywhere else. So the idea that we would come up with the same policy that other places have already put into effect that hasn't worked, and for some reason it would work here, is just asinine. It's done to appease a segment of the Democratic base and to say, oh, we're fighting for you, when really the policy kind of fights against them. And, you know, if you wanted to go in there and cap rents at like 20%, or this is the example they always use, right? Democrats will use an example. I talked to a constituent and their rent went up 50% in 1 year. Is that happening? Gosh, maybe. I mean, that kind of sucks. Like, I'm not even in favor of that. That's kind of a shitty thing to do. But is that happening across the board? No. They probably made it up, first of all. I'm going to guess they made it up. But did they find the one worst case, one-off situation? And then they use that as an excuse to cap rent increases at 7%. Okay, you're saying predatory is like, oh, 30, 40, 50% increases in a single year, but you want to cap it at 7%, which their costs are some years going to exceed that. So they use these extreme examples, but then they set rent caps at a very low rate that are going to hurt a bunch of landlords, not just landlords in those most extreme cases that, again, I think they probably made up. So I don't know what Bob Ferguson is thinking. You cannot be a moderate. You cannot be a responsible. You can't even be very smart, which I know he's a smart guy. I know he's a smart guy. I don't think that's in dispute. There's nothing smart about rent control. There's nothing smart about promising people you're going to build hundreds of thousands of additional units of housing and then signing off on a policy that's going to make that impossible. So for such a smart guy, this is a very dumb thing to do. And I'm also thoroughly annoyed that you made me hope and wish and think there might be a chance that you'd veto rent control when you were telling the Democrats behind the scenes all along that you were going to pass it. Absolutely ridiculous. Our weekly housing segment is brought to you by our friends at the Rental Housing Association, who we are proud to fight alongside trying to defeat some of these asinine policies like rent control. If you are a small to mid-sized landlord in Washington State, become a member of RHA today, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. They are fighting back, trying to protect you from these crazy, crazy policies. All right, in this next segment, and we'll just go right to unbelievable if that's all right, Nicole. I thought about Dory when I saw this. So we got this sort of tip And I was like, oh my God. Dory loved, our late friend Dory Monson, loved Seattle traditions. And when a Seattle tradition was under attack, he was the guy who was going to cover it better than anyone else. And if he were alive today, I could just see him starting off his show with this story as the big lead, and he'd play his little sounder that said, I sense a Dory rant coming on. Right? Am I right? I am right. We don't have that sounder, but we do have our segment, Unbelievable. All right, so Seafair is a Seattle tradition, and we got a chance to go be really up close and personal at Seafair last year. It's so much fun watching the races, you know, all of the tradition that has been going on at Seafair for decades and decades and decades, and it's just a good family-friendly, fun event to do in the summer. So one of the traditions has been Miss Seafair, and I love looking at these old pictures. And it's women from all walks of life, crowned Miss Seafair. I love that picture. That girl's so pretty. And it's not just like, oh, the, you know, we're going to crown the hottest chick, Miss Seafair. No, it's people who are involved in their communities, women who are, you know, doing outreach activities all year round, who are out there supporting nonprofits and just being exemplary role models for young women. So I think they changed the name of this to Miss Seafair in like 1972. So they've been crowning Miss Seafair ever since. Not anymore. Miss Seafair has fallen victim to the woke mind virus. So this year, they announced that they are replacing Miss Seafair with something more inclusive. Because it's not very inclusive just to let women do things, right? That's transphobic, I would even say. Can't have any sort of accomplishment, goal, thing that's just for women. Nope, can't do that in today's day and age with the woke mind virus. So now it's changed to the more inclusive Seafair Community Hero. It says, we're excited to announce the Seafair Community Hero Program, an evolution of the Miss Seafair role that celebrates emerging young leaders ages 18 and older who are making a positive impact in their communities. This program is designed to connect with and reflect the diverse communities we serve, highlighting individuals who demonstrate leadership, resilience, and a passion for creating change. This is basically them kowtowing to radical gender ideology, you know. And maybe they were foreseeing that there would be some issue where a transgender person, a man pretending to be a woman, wanted to be Miss Seafair and it causing a whole stir. So they're trying to get out ahead of it and say, let's just do the Seafair Heroes program. And it's not just for women, it's for anyone. So you're going to get rid of a 70-year tradition in the name of inclusivity. And I showed you those old pictures of the Seafair, Miss Seafairs from the years gone by. From all walks of life, from all different races and ethnicities. So it's not like for 70 years they've crowned a white Miss Seafair. But that kind of diversity isn't enough anymore. It can't just be diversity of skin color. It has to be diversity of gender, too. We've got to allow people who are gender fluid to go into these spaces. That's what this is all about, and it's absolutely insane. So the exclusive part of this is we got forwarded from an unnamed source a thread where essentially Seafair was breaking this news to previous Seafair royalty. And so there's like dozens and dozens of people on this email. And it was basically like, hey, we want to let you know that we're doing away with Miss Seafair and we're excited to announce we're replacing it with this more inclusive title or whatever it is. What they probably didn't expect is for some of the Miss Seafairs of years past to be pissed off about it. So there were a couple former Miss Seafairs who responded to this entire thread and said, why are you doing this? Why would you do this? I want to read you just a couple of them that we obtained exclusively. So let's start with Caroline. So Caroline, so thanks for sending me this email. I was Miss Seafair in 1972. So Caroline was, Kathy Beck Dye. The email is to Caroline. Kathy Beck Dye, Miss Seafair 1972, the very first year they even called it Miss Seafair. Thank you for sending me this email. I was Miss Seafair in 1972. It was an honor, and I worked hard that year representing Seafair year-round, not just during the summer celebration. I was delighted to ride in last year's Seafair parade. The double-decker bus was full of past Miss Seafairs. The crowd was very excited to see all of us. We mattered. We represent part of the history of Seafair. She goes on to say, when I got off the bus, I had to walk back to my car behind the crowds. I still had my crown and sash on, even though I am 71 years old. So many people stopped me and asked if they could take a photo with me. Kids came up waving. People shouted hello. I made an impact last year, just like I did 52 years ago in 1972. I feel it is a mistake to eliminate the Miss Seafair program. People still enjoy the wonderful traditions of Seafair, and the Miss Seafair program is one of them. I have goosebumps. I have goosebumps.
I know.
Just her saying, like, I mattered, and what we did mattered, and the program
and
mattered.
How special it was to be asked.
Oh my God, I literally have goosebumps. Photos. That pisses me off so much. There's another one that said, I want to start off by, this is a former Miss Seafair. I want to start off by sharing that I do like the idea of the hero program, but I do not believe it should come at the expense of the Miss Seafair program. From what I understand via the press release, the hero program is like the Miss Seafair program, except the person chosen could also be a man. Despite decades of activism and work, women are clearly not yet equal to men in our society, and women of color even further behind, as much as we would like that to happen. So I believe it is essential and important to protect and nurture programs that help foster more opportunities for women at every level of society. This is not to say that there shouldn't be a program of some sort that includes men, but men have not historically needed such programs due to their already existing advantage over women. This is why I'm extremely disappointed to read that the Miss Seafair program is no longer being continued. And, you know, my whole thought of all this is, could you not just have a separate thing, Mr. Seafair? Because no, they'd say, well, that's not going to include the gender diverse community. So you can't just have a Mr. Seafair. I already know the conversations that happened behind the scenes about this. Because of radical gender ideology and the obedience that you acquiesce to it, Miss and Mr. can't use them. You can't single people out like that. Because there's some people who just don't fit into those categories. And I will say for the record that I am good friends with the executive director of Seafair this year. She's new to it. It's her first year as executive director. I already text her and let her know, I'm sorry, I still love you, but this is stupid. and I had sort of said that to her, you know, why not just have a separate category? And I'm not going to share a personal conversation between friends, but I did let her know this is really, really dumb and disappointing. She and I have disagreed on political things for a long time, so I don't think it's going to be a surprise. But again, you have to take away these spaces and these things that have been meant for women. And for women to send a positive message and be good role models for younger women. You can't have that anymore because of radical gender ideology. You could have the Seafair Heroes program. It could be open to anyone. Nominate anyone over 18 who's been a positive role model in their communities. And they could be celebrated at Seafair as the Seafair hero. And then you can still have Miss Seafair and celebrate this wonderful tradition that's been going on in the city for years. But the woke mind virus has to ruin everything, including something as mundane. I mean, I don't even know if mundane is the word. It's harmless. It's harmless. To allow a woman to be named Miss Seafair and to wear a crown and a sash and to be celebrated. It's harmless. But you have to take that away from women too, because women can't have anything for themselves anymore. I will never be attending Seafair again. Mark my words. I will never be attending Seafair again. Not that they care, but we had a good time last year. We got to go out on a boat and participate in Seafair. And I would love to do that again, but I am never going to attend Seafair again. Unless they reinstitute Miss Seafair.
Did you see who the queen is? And I'm surprised they didn't get rid of king and queen.
Yeah, you have the king and queen. So you still have Seafair royalty.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to get rid of Miss Seafair.
Yeah, did you see it? It's Carmen Best.
Carmen Best, yeah. Carmen, you should also resign. Because they took away Miss Seafair. Absolutely ridiculous.
It's
absolutely
wild.
Ridiculous. Would Dory not have a big rant about that?
Oh, absolutely.
That would have been a Dory story for sure. All right, we'll get to some national news, but first, do massive market swings have you in a panic? Maybe you're getting close to retirement, and every time that market's going up and down, you're just clutching your chest. Well, do you even know how tariffs are impacting your retirement portfolio? Have you checked? Have you asked your money manager how your retirement portfolio is managed against risk? If you haven't done any of those things, you don't know the answer to any of those things, we have a great webinar for you to attend coming up on May the 22nd with our friend Zach Abraham of Bulwark Capital. It is going to be their tariff edition live webinar. So they're going to talk about how the market is reacting to recent tariffs, how those tariffs could impact your retirement portfolios. They'll do a longer term outlook for 2025, and they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities. opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So sign up for Zach's free webinar tariff edition Thursday, May 22nd, but you can sign up right now for free at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, some national news I want to get to. Donald Trump, he ruined Cinco de Mayo. He ruined Cinco de Mayo.
He ruins everything.
Ruins everything. Because Mexicans didn't want to celebrate Cinco de Mayo, according to CNN, because they were worried if they celebrated Cinco de Mayo in public, ICE might be there, and ICE might decide to deport them. Here's CNN.
Today is May 5th, and that means Cinco de Mayo, Wolf, a holiday that celebrates Mexico's victory over France. But some in the Battle of Puebla, I should say, but some communities have canceled or scaled back cultural events because of President Trump's crackdown on illegal immigration and the fear among many Latinos that they could be arrested.
Where does CNN get this stuff? They just manufacture it. They just manufacture it as if ICE, yeah, ICE is staking out the, all those Mexican restaurants we listed on the show yesterday. ICE is like, huh, Brandy's secretly giving us a location to stake out. So if anybody shows up with brown skin, we're going to ask them for their documentation. And if they can't provide it, deported. Cinco deporto.
I heard from a few people that the Mexican restaurants were not very crowded yesterday. Must have been why.
Like, maybe CNN didn't make it up. Maybe it's true. I just, they really go through these leaps in their minds where ICE has that much time to just stake out places where Mexicans might be celebrating Cinco de Mayo and then look at skin color and say, you, come here. It's just so crazy. All right. So speaking of the immigration issue, we didn't talk about this yesterday and I wanted to, so we're going to talk about it today. So the White House is talking about paying illegal aliens $1,000 plus the cost of flights to self-deport. Basically, instead of us hunting you down, tracking you down, arresting you at a Cinco de Mayo celebration, we'll give you $1,000 and you just self-deport. Here is a clip from Fox News.
Fox News can report exclusively that DHS will announce today that they're going to start paying for the commercial flights of illegal aliens who self-deport from the U.S. And on top of that, they're going to pay them an additional $1,000 stipend once they're confirmed to have left the country. Now, DHS says doing this is going to be significantly cheaper for the American taxpayer. They tell us that right now it costs, on average, about $17,000 to arrest, detain, and deport someone. They say paying for self-deportations and the stipend will only cost about $4,500 per person. That's about 70% cheaper. Aliens are going to have to register to self-deport on the new CBP Home app to access that DHS financial assistance, as well as announce their intent to leave the country. DHS Secretary Kristi Noem tells Fox in part, quote, "If you are here illegally, self-deportation is the best, safest, and most cost-effective way to leave the United States to avoid arrest."
I love it. I think that's a great idea. Because if it's going to cost $17,000 to house them, to feed them in the correctional facility, and then deport them from the country, why would you not just pay for their flight and give them $1,000? Now, the hesitancy would be, okay, what if somebody comes across today or last week and they're just trying to get $1,000? I don't know if anybody would do that because that seems like a lot of effort for $1,000, and then you have a deportation on your record and it would hurt your ability to come back to the United States legally in the future. I mean, I wouldn't put it past people. So I don't know that it'll be abused that much or if they're going to put some safeguards in place to make sure that people don't abuse it in that way. But this is a no-brainer. I saw some conservatives freaking out over this, like, this is a waste of money. No, it's not. No, it's not. If it's costing 17 grand, this is like a super deal. And if that's all it'll take to get them out of the country, $1,000, pay them. 100%. Or you say, hey, we'll send it by a money order as soon as you get back to your country and prove that you've left. Never send it. Oh, good
also,
stuff.
I think that it still stands that if they self-deport, then they can apply to come back too. Like,
yeah.
Go ahead.
And I don't know if they've said that they can, but if you do self-deport, I mean, as long as you haven't come in illegally a bunch of times and been deported already, I think they should allow those people. Let's say you've never been deported from the U.S. before, but you're here illegally. You self-deport. Identify yourself, self-deport, get $1,000 or whatever it is. Maybe after 10 years, you let them try to apply for legal citizenship. So maybe some sort of, you know, forgive them in a certain way or give them hope of something else would add to the, because $1,000, whatever, But if you're adding on to that, that you could be considered for permanent citizenship in the future. So there's more of an incentive there. So I really like that. I don't see anything quite controversial about that. All right. I have our daily subscriber show poll about should UW cancel the Riley Gaines appearance. We'll get to that in a moment. First, I have talked for years about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. I'm at the lowest weight I've been at in years. And for 2.5 years, I've been able to keep the weight off by using what I learned on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. They teach you what to eat in the right portions, just healthy food, no prepackaged meals, no drugs, no injections. You shop for yourself at the grocery store. They make it super easy. And they just, it's really about jumpstarting your metabolism. And that's why so many people lose a significant amount of weight in the first 60 days on the program. So you're jumpstarting your metabolism. You're really focused on portion control for those first 60 days. I lost 30 pounds in 2 months. And then I've lost, gosh, another 13 pounds since then. So I'm down 43 pounds total. And I've kept it off for 2.5 years. It's the first time I've ever been able to do that. So eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Schedule a free consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team today to see if the program is right for you. Okay, I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X this morning, given what we know about what happened last night at UW and the threats of violence against Riley Gaines for tonight, should the University of Washington, out of an abundance of caution, cancel Riley Gaines' appearance for tonight? Nicole, yay or nay?
I don't know. I kind of struggle with this because for safety purposes, and sometimes I just think it's giving too much attention to these angry mobster, pathetic people.
Because like to have the
this
event?
Like sets it up for them. Like if Riley wanted to do this event somewhere else where it would obviously be shut down, then you would actually be able to get your message out. But really, we're just like exposing all of these ridiculous people, right? So I kind of struggle with the intent behind it from both sides.
So do you think sometimes the intent is to cause a problem? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't, you know.
I mean, it's to expose people, right? So I don't think it's doing it with the wrong intentions necessarily, but I think that it's to expose this obnoxiousness of them trying to shut down these people that have a very common sense message, right? So I think it's a purpose to expose.
Yeah.
But
they
also
know what's going to happen.
They know what's going to happen, and it's putting like cops in danger, reporters in danger, students in danger. It's just silliness. And if we really want the message to get out, like, go have it at the Everett Event Center or Angel of the Winds, whatever, or someplace that would shut it down.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that I think the intent, I don't know, the intent, because they should be able to go and talk about these things without being met by violent mobs. But I do think there is an understanding that this is going to happen, and it brings attention to the issue. So I agree with you on that, but I just can't advocate for them to cancel it, because then you're giving in to the mob. And then the only kind of speech that will be allowed on college campuses is leftist speech, which is already mostly the case. So most of you are on that same side that no, they can't cancel it. Julie, you can't give in to the terrorists. How about we just don't allow them to be terrorists? Oh, no, it's Washington. They're mostly peaceful protesters. Yeah. Let's see, Brenda, I voted no, but I'm not the one being threatened. So I agree with Kathleen that it really should be up to the speakers. I want to see if I can find Kathleen's comment. Kathleen, the decision to cancel for safety reasons should be made by the speaker who has had threats made against them. And I think Riley Gaines is used to that. I do not believe that Riley Gaines has any interest whatsoever in canceling. So let's see, Sharon, why should she be canceled? It shouldn't be hard to provide proper security if there was actually a will to do so. And I do anticipate that Riley Gaines will have some pretty solid security at the University of Washington. Carenza, my son goes to UW. They must stop the protesters. If they already know they are coming, then be prepared. This has to stop. Again, 100%. So they're putting signs out there. Let's have a rally to kick Riley Gaines off campus. Pictures of guns. We'll protect trans youth by any means necessary. So there should be an absolute mob of police officers at the University of Washington tonight. Full riot gear, armed to the hilt. There would be no excuse beyond political considerations not to do that. All right, over on Locals, what say ye? KJC, I voted yes reluctantly because I believe tonight will be worse than what happened in Portland, and I worry about Riley's safety. The whole situation is so wrong. Chris, I'm okay with peaceful protests as long as they don't impact anyone else. Any violence or threat of violence should be dealt with arrest and expulsion. Weisscastle, Brandy, they should be on full alert with the intent of ensuring the safety of speakers regardless of their message. And Matthew Cook will make you the last comment on this. The heckler's veto is the tactic of the left. Do not let them win and arrest anyone breaking the law or interfering with free speech. And that's the key. You have to immediately effect arrest. I've seen them do it before. Back when they actually tried to crack down on May Day protesters, there was a point where they decided we're not going to give them an inch. After years and years of just letting them roam through the streets and do whatever they wanted, you know, there was finally some efforts to crack down and say, no, we're not giving you an inch. We're not giving you the opportunity to commit acts of violence and vandalism, etc. But the political will has sure faded over the years. And I didn't even think the political will was very strong back then. So absolutely insane. All right, let's get to other comments about the show today before we get to our closing sanity check. Matt Gilbert. Brandy, they also come out to restock on Hot Pockets, the cosplay ninjas. Yeah, you gotta, you know, come out of the basement once in a while, whether it's to get Hot Pockets or to hurl anti-Semitic slurs and say you wish cops were dead. All right, D, they probably can't even do a push-up softer than Charmin. Yeah, and isn't it so embarrassing to be the cop on camera backing away from them? Backing away from ninja cosplayers who have garbage cans that have been cut in half, using them as shields. I feel bad for those cops because I'm sure they're just doing their job and doing what they are told to do. But the POET team is the POET team. What does it stand for? Protest. Will you look that up for me? It's like, oh, we're going to talk nice to these crazy people and get them to back down. It's never worked. Not once. Never effectively worked at all. Let's see. Krista, the task force won't say anything. Neither will Fergie or Harrell. They don't care. They don't gain anything from being stern on extremism of their own side of the aisle, which is gross because it's their alma mater. So they're totally fine with rampant anti-Semitism on the campus of their alma mater. It's disgusting.
It's a police outreach engagement team.
Cool. Police outreach engagement team. Just wild
Sounds
stuff.
Really threatening. Sounds tough.
Yeah, Charles, out with no bail needed in time for the next event, probably. Yeah, probably. On rent control, Sean Bell, it's not rent control, Brandy. Fees fess up to the actual definition of the phrase and the difference in this case. I don't know what you're referring to. It is rent control, so I don't know what the difference would be. They want to call it rent stabilization, where they're stabilizing rents by controlling rents. So I don't use the captured language of the left. Mm-hmm. Kathy, Friends made rent control look good. Oh, did they talk about rent control on Friends?
Well, that's why Monica could have such a large apartment because she took over the lease from her grandma or whatever.
Oh, and her grandma's was like rent controlled.
Right. So it never, yeah, it hadn't increased in like 30 years or whatever. But at the same time, it shows how people abuse the system. And
oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, just staying it as long as we can.
Mm-hmm. Works good for the renter, not the landlord, which is the point.
Right, and it has to be fair for both because you're not, like if it's a government building, government-owned building, ultimately it's the taxpayers who have to subsidize it, but these are owned by private people. So how can you force, to me it's an unlawful taking of private property for public uses. I don't know how it's legal. I don't know how it's constitutional to basically say you have to use your property in the way that we see fit. It's unreal. Let's see. Alan? So what happens if you cap rent at 7% and then against the landlord, then nail them with a 3% property tax increase? See how that works? Yeah, that's one of the things that's increasing for landlords is you're capping the rent at 7%. And then you're also increasing property taxes. You go in there, you make all these requirements that they can only rent to these people or they can't check criminal backgrounds or whatever it is. Then they get a deadbeat tenant who won't pay them rent for 2 years like the guy in Bellevue. And then you just screw them over and they end up selling the unit entirely. All right, let's see. On the Miss Seafair situation, Mo, Dory and Nicole would have had on the former Miss Seafair and I would have probably gotten choked up. Are you saying we can't have on the former Miss Seafair? I think we were trying. Captain Cranky Pants, have these wokesters found anything or anyone they don't hate? Good question. Yeah, you just, as long as you have to have some sort of gender diversity. So that's number one. Mm-hmm. You have to be a raging socialist. So that's number two. And then you can't disagree with them on absolutely anything. So as long as you fit in that little box, they'll welcome you just fine. And then you either have to be a barista. No offense against baristas. You either have to be a barista or have no job and live in your parents' basement, and then they'll be best friends with you for sure. All right, before we get to our closing sanity check, our friend Wes Jones has been talking to us about the state of the real estate market, and it was certainly slow for a long period of time, but it's picking back up. However, we're still not in the place where you can just throw any old house on the market, do absolutely nothing to it, and get a gazillion dollars for it. You do have to put some effort into it. You need to make sure it's priced correctly when it hits the market. And then you also have to make sure that, yeah, there might have to be some cosmetic upgrades that you need to do to get the best possible offers on the table. And Wes can help you with those things. That's what he specializes in. So if you're thinking, I got a little bit of a fixer-upper here, but I'm looking to move and I just don't have the time or energy or money to deal with it, well, Wes is your guy because he's going to come in with his team, Listing Boost Concierge Service. They can help you make the cosmetic upgrades that are going to, that you're going to get the money back on. I mean, that's the key, right? You don't just make upgrades for the sake of making upgrades. These are things that you're going to get that money back plus some when the home goes to sell. So he's going to take that off your plate. And then also you can pay for those things at closing. So you don't even have to front the money up. You don't have the money up front, which is a really nice feature as well. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It simply is a better way to sell your home. All right, with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. What, Nicole?
Oh, I was just going to mention something. Ari just posted that five of the rioters from last night have been released.
Five of the rioters so far have been released. Gotcha. Is that all he said?
He says prosecutors and police didn't object to the release of four of them. Had hearing. Yeah, he's exposing a lot of them. So I recommend following Ari.
Yeah, Ari is great on this stuff because he's been following all the anti-Semites for a long time. So I'm sure those people will show back up tonight and try to harass Riley Gaines. All right. Getting into our closing sanity check. So Gavin Newsom, of course, is trying to fit himself into a mold that will appeal to enough Americans so he can be elected president. He was on BBC and says he's just trying to figure out what went so wrong for Democrats in 2024.
We lost. We lost the popular vote and we lost the electoral vote. We got crushed, and we need to be humble about that, and we need to have some grace, and we need to understand why. Was it because of the incumbency penalty? Was it because of inflation? Was it because of interest rates? Was it because of immigration? Was it because we were too, quote unquote, woke? Was it because of the issues with Israel? Was it all of the above? I think we are going through that forensic. We need to understand it. At the same time, we also have to push back against the whitewaters and headwinds of the Trump administration. But
long list of things there. Every single one of them could have contributed and probably did contribute to the massive defeat from Democrats. But who is really trying to figure it out? He's sitting here like this master we. We're doing the forensic. We're trying to get to the bottom of it. Are they, though? I mean, we just gave an example at the top of the show today about left-wing extremism that our governor and the mayor of Seattle, the top two elected Democrats in our state, will not comment on. So it doesn't seem like in the Democratic Party, there's an awful lot of interest in distancing themselves from the craziest faction of their party. And until they do that, I don't think that they'll have a president back in the White House, hopefully. That has been our closing sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Again, we'll be on campus tonight for the Riley Gaines event, hoping for a peaceful event where everybody can have their voices heard. And that's the beautiful thing about America. But, of course, I don't expect that from the far left. I expect ninja cosplaying, angriness, violence, vandalism, but one can hope. If you haven't signed up to support our show already, please do so. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. It's $5 a month, and that's how we do this show full-time, bring you four live shows a week and a special show on Sundays. See you back here tomorrow at noon.